Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're hyped to talk about the first episode of Volume 2 of Season 3 of The Witcher on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and the legend of Korra, uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country, and navigated the conflict of House of the Dragon. You can find our seasons 1 and 2 coverage of The Witcher on your podcast feeds.
We had planned to cover The Witcher spinoff series this week while we were waiting for Volume 2 to drop.
But all is not what it seems.
But Netflix surprised us and gave us some screeners. So we pivoted and we're going to discuss episode 6 with you today. Don't worry, we will have coverage of Blood Origin in the coming weeks, so keep an eye on your feed for that. Spoiler alert, we'll be talking about all of the events of episode 6, all of the episodes leading up to it, and some comparisons with the books. So if you haven't had a chance to watch at least the first episode of Volume 2, go watch it and come back to this episode afterwards.
Kinfolk, you've seen through our mask. This is who we are at our core. Kinfolk Lore will have adult content. So if you're ready for multiple walks of shame that include an attempted kidnapping, an elven ambush, and a possible need for a barber surgeon, you have come to the right place. Let's go.
So episode 6, which is titled, Everybody Has a Plan Till They Get Punched in the Face.
Shout out Mike Tyson. Let's go.
We're going to talk about the Redanian coup attempt first. The episode opens with Dijkstra escorting Geralt to what Philippa calls a purge of rogue mages and their leader, Vilgefortz. A number of mages have been brought into the room as observers, in addition to those who are on trial by the Redanians. Yen realizes what has happened, but as the sun rises, she worries about Ciri and tries to get to her. Mm-hmm. At the cabin nearby, Ciri awakens just before Radovid takes advantage of the protection spell expiring and Ciri leaves. She's out. Like, Yaskier is not the one to protect me right now.
No, she was gone. And that little shout out from Yen, like, Ciri woke, like an alarm clock. She popped up. You know, kids, Yen's getting to take advantage. Kids never pop up when you call them for, like, it's like trying to wake them up for school. It's never going to happen like that.
So Yaskier has a little conversation with Radovid, reads him for Philp. It was great. And he also runs after Ciri. When Tisea arrives to the Redanian trial, what are we calling this?
I don't know what to call this. Like a bad conference room chat. It's like everyone's around a conference table. They're handcuffed.
I don't know what to call it really, but she arrives.
Yeah.
And Geralt notes that someone is using the cover of fog to hide approaching ships. Dijkstra thinks it's his ships. Surprise! It is not. Tisea releases all the mages and a fight ensues.
Death to Redania! What a core ball. Goodness, Vilgefortz.
On her way to find Ciri, Yen is confronted by Lydia, who tries to kill her. But Triss saves Yen, and Yen kills Lydia just to shut her up. Like, she's maybe would have survived.
My master will have died.
Maybe would have made it if she had just been quiet. But Yen is like, I don't have time for this. Just shut up.
I think Yen was pissed. She was like, yo, you must not like the rest of your face. And then she started to get washed. I think she was just like mad that it even was that close. So she like, you know what? Side of the neck to you, you know?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'm not really sad Lydia's gone. No. But anyway, we'll get to that when we go through all of the many losses. So Triss shows Yen out of Aretusa. Tisea follows Vilgefortz out of the fight between the Redanians and the mages as fighters line up outside. At this point,
because this guy just walks out like, my time here is done. I'm done with this. I'm like, yo, if to say is like, where the fuck are you going?
Well, he tells her. Vilgefortz tells Tisaya that the Scoia'tael has arrived to destroy Aretusa in the name of the White Flame. We'll unpack this scene later, but I didn't know I could hate this guy more. Like, I didn't know I could dislike him more.
Every time it gets worse and worse. Every single time.
Geralt also follows someone out of the fight. He follows Dijkstra, and I don't even know. Are we going to call this a fight? Because Geralt just beats him up. No. Like, there's no
Geralt,
real fight.
Don't do anything like, hasty.
Just, like, wrecks him. I actually felt kind of bad for Dijkstra because I was like, damn, what did he really do? Like, he was just out here trying to out the bad mages.
Listen, he's in need of a barber surgeon. I don't even know what a barber surgeon is, but he's in need of one really bad.
I think he needs magical healing.
He needs magical healing.
I think he's beyond like anything that a human can do. So after he breaks up with Tisaya, Vilgefortz opens the door to allow Francesca, Philivandriel, Cahir, and the Scoia'tael fighters into the castle. A bunch of mages die immediately, like real quick. It's pretty tough. Yen and Ciri find each other outside, but their reunion is interrupted by Rhiant, who is quickly dispatched by Geralt. There's not even time for him to monologue. It is just, it's a wash, like immediately.
Oh, it's so good.
It was great. The fact that this dude has been the villain for the last like two seasons and they kill him and Geralt's like mid-sentence when he chops off his head and he just keeps going.
Yeah.
He's like, anyway, so what are we going to do?
Yeah, we got to get off this island. Let's go.
Attempting to end it all, Tisaya sends a force towards Francesca, but Philivandriel steps in between them and is destroyed. I don't even know what to call it.
What can you call it? He just splattered. It looked like freaking, you can't do this on television, but not the green slime. Like, it was just like everywhere. It was
pretty awful.
It's like the Nickelodeon slime, but red. You know what I mean? Like, everywhere. Like, and you know, he's been with us since season one. Super early.
Yeah,
like little known. Let's talk about it. Like, Toss a Coin is partially about him.
Yeah. Well, we get to the losses. We can talk more about Philivandriel, but woof. This one was rough. Arturus makes an attempt to take out Francesca, but guess who takes him out? Frangilla.
Okay, I need answers. I need answers.
Who just showed up from nowhere.
I need answers to this. I don't understand how she went from drunken in a tavern to like full force Frangilla giving counsel and advice and orchestrating like the invasion of the elves. What did I miss?
A scene that was cut, maybe? I don't know. I have so many questions about there. Frangilla and Cahir in this episode just question marks next to them. Just question marks.
So after this, all hell breaks loose and both Francesca and Tisaya are barely able to keep it together after the deaths of Arturus and Philivandriel. Once Triss is wounded by an arrow, Istrid goes full like, oh my God, save her. Oh, please. We need to retrieve the Book of the Monoliths, but don't let anything happen to her. Like, it was like, so,
I need you. I was like, okay.
So
are
excellent.
You guys even like a couple? Like, what's going on?
Also, Triss gets fucked up in every conflict. Like, every single one.
Well, in fairness, Triss is brave. So she's always in the mix.
Yeah.
She's not one to run.
But it's true, but she just gets washed. Like, it's just really rough. So Istrid goes to retrieve the Book of Monoliths, but is intercepted by Vilgefortz, who sends him through a portal and takes the book. That's not all I wanted. He didn't just want the book. For some reason, he wanted Istrid. I have no idea why.
I don't understand. Where is Istrid?
Where did he send him? I have no clue where he sent him. Taseya goes to her room and out onto the balcony and summons the thunder of Elzor, a spell of last resort. Yen senses this and says a teary goodbye to Ciri. And it was beautiful because Ciri, more than even Geralt, recognizes how important it is with the bond that they have as mother and daughter, essentially, for her to go to her.
And yeah, we don't abandon each other, so don't abandon me now, to Geralt was beautiful. Because yeah. It was like, yes, I have to leave you, but understand that I need you to mm-hmm. stand by my side while I leave you. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a really beautiful moment back. And Geralt got quiet. He was like, oh, okay.
And he's like, yeah, so don't abandon me then. Yeah, that was it. I love that. I love that scene. This is one of the best scenes of the episode. In an episode packed of great scenes. It was
yeah,
it was
totally.
So Kahir and Frangilla have a brief reunion, and Franny's out here like, he should think for himself. Like, don't be out here just doing what the White Flame wants. What is the, I don't know where she's going with this. Maybe we'll find out a little later, but she's like, yeah, you know what? I feel liberated since I started thinking for myself. You should try it. Think for yourself. To say a spell, we find out, allows her to kill everyone she sets eyes on with lightning. And it takes a great deal of power. It somehow also gives you a magnificent dye job. Unbelievable.
Beautiful.
Like,
beautiful.
Amazing.
Just gorgeous. Yeah. I was like, ooh. Yeah. She looks great with, like, the silver hair.
Yeah.
Like, it's fire.
It was fire. She changed it up. Trying to switch it up a little bit. And
I mean, just a lot of women after they go through a breakup change their hair. They don't usually, like, murder a lot of people, but whatever. She's Taseya. So no,
it's really great. Oh my goodness, I love it. Kahir rides out saying he's gonna go find Ciri, and he goes and finds Geralt and Ciri. But instead of trying to capture her, he pledges himself to her and apologizes for what he took from her. In another powerful scene. Where Ciri is, you know, able to, like, hold her own. He throws down his weapon and she grabs him and is ready to kill him. And he says, let your face be the last one that I see on this earth. Like, I owe that to you. Like, take my life. Like, I can't ever give you back what I stole from you. I don't know where Kahir is coming from this. I mean, we've seen him start to break from the White Flame a little bit. And, like, maybe this guy's a little bit out there. And then as he's doing this, the Skoatel arrive and Kahir fights them off. Very Jon Snow runs out there with his, like, as they're riding on horses, you know, they're galloping towards, like,
I didn't even make the Jon Snow connection, but yes, it does. Like, it did give some Battle of the Bastards vibes.
Battle of the Bastards fully. I'm like, wait, they have the high ground. They're on horses. They're going to kill you, Kahir. Like, this is not going to work out. And he has no army riding to his rescue. Geralt and Ciri escape, and once Taseya runs out of power, it looks like the Aretusa mages will have to face off against Francesca once again until Stregobor shows up.
This is the best moment in this
with all his elven hatred in his heart. Burn, you mongrels! I'll send you to hell to join Falca.
In the moment, I was like, fuck yeah, go Stregobor. But then afterwards, I was like, wait a second.
Wait, exactly.
I hate this guy. I hate Stregobor. He is a racist. Like, I cannot stand him. But in the moment, I was like, caught up in the battle.
It was like, yes, Stregobor to the rescue. No, this fucking xenophobe. What is going on? This is terrible.
He just also like comes out of almost nowhere and then is just like unleashes all of the fire that he's had in his heart.
Yes. He says, I've been waiting for this like forever. Like, he literally says he's been waiting for this moment. You know, this guy is wild.
It was like both awful, but also it was kind of, on second watch, I could not help but laugh at this point. I was just like, there's been many times where I've been like, why is Stregobor still in this story? And I really feel like Lauren Hisdridge kept him in this story for this moment.
Oh my God.
Genuinely felt like this was the moment.
So with all that hate, He uses fire magic against them and basically burns them up. It's crazy. I don't know how they get out of there. But Yen sends Triss to go find Geralt. And Geralt is in the midst of a fight for Ciri with Vilgefortz. And Vilgefortz is monologuing about how they're the same.
Just going off. Just, bruh. We don't have time for this.
Yeah, the worst part about all I had to do was holding back. Now I hold back no more. I mean, like, and now we've come to the epilogue. You know what the epilogue is. Mansplaining the whole thing. Like, we know what a fucking epilogue is, bro. Like, no, what are you doing? It's fucking giving us cliff notes as he fights.
Geralt's response to him is great. Enough of your parallels. You lack originality.
Oh, it's so good. So he basically tells Ciri to run off, and he's wounded pretty badly in this fight. Geralt gets, you know, let's just call it what it is. The question is answered that we had early on in this run of this season. Of who do we think wins in a fight? Vilgefortz really, really washes Geralt. Like, it's not even close.
And honestly, I feel like if Geralt hadn't been distracted by worrying about Ciri, this fight goes differently.
Yeah, I agree.
This did not feel like Geralt was at his best. Like, this felt like he's so stressed by the notion that Vilgefortz or someone else can get hold of Ciri that he is, like, focused on that, and his head is not in the game. And also, he comes into this fight very cocky because Geralt doesn't usually get washed.
Yeah,
he comes by people. Like, he has trouble with monsters sometimes, but, like, people in general, like, this doesn't happen to him
at all. And I was wondering if, and maybe you know about, and we could talk about it a little bit later, is this, like, the elixir thing? Like, does he take elixirs whenever he fights humans? I've never seen him do it, right? So it's always just elixir when it's monsters.
Yeah, and like, okay, so before the Battle of Syntra, we see him meditating, which is basically how he charges up in the game, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have time to do anything in this. He is wasting his time with the Redanian coup in the morning. Obviously, him and Yen did not sleep all night. Like, there's just like a lot.
There was no sleeping going on.
Yeah, and also I think in addition to being distracted with, you know, the notion that Ciri was in grave danger, I think there's also just the arrogance of, like, I don't think that Geralt has ever experienced a fight like this in his life.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So as he, you know, gets done in pretty bad, I mean, like, broken back, like, the stab through the stomach, Ciri is taking off down the beach, and she ends up at Tor Lara, where the portal speaks to her. She enters it, and Vilgefortz is trying to tell her she's not ready. She doesn't know, and she's asking it to speak to her. And then Vilgefortz tries to tell her, you know, step back. But Ciri does something, or the portal does something, and everything explodes. It explodes. The whole tower explodes. You hear him get pushed back by the flames, and Ciri, it's an explosion that it's hard to imagine that anyone would survive, but it's a big explosion. Triss finds Geralt in the water, floating. How did he get to the water?
I don't know. I think we're supposed to assume that the explosion caused, like, waves that washed him up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she basically takes him to safety. So let's talk about who we're pouring out alcohol, any sort of any beverage for. All right. Philavendral. I feel like we do.
Yeah, I do. He's been with us since the beginning of this story. He was, aside from Dara, he is like one of the first elves we really encounter and get to know. I say yes.
Yeah.
And he's a sympathetic character.
Agreed. Agreed. And I also don't think that he was in it. He wants to get back what was taken from the elves. I think he would love to, if he does believe Ciri is like maybe a savior for their people. But he's lost a child. He's lost a lot. I mean, he was at the edge of the world, right? As chronicled in the song, and really trying to figure out how he could even help his people. And then he fought back to this moment and sacrificed himself really in this moment to save the life of the woman that he loves. And you know, we can't fault him for it. So yes, let's pour one out for Phil Evandrel. Rance, fucking drop.
Not a drop. No. In fact, I feel like he subtracts a little from Phil Evandrel's pour. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, not a drop.
No, we're not doing anything there. All the mages who died, I guess so. Yes, I would go there. The Skoatel that Stregobor lit up.
Yeah,
I'd go there too.
The thing about this conflict is that both sides think that they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, I have questions about why Francesca was there to begin with, but they're acting under orders. They think they're there for their people. So, yeah, they're there for good reasons.
Arturus, oddly enough, we didn't even know his name for this episode. But yes, I think he fought valiantly. He could have been a better uncle to Frangilla, and maybe we have a better outcome in that situation. But ultimately, yes, I'll pour a tiny bit out in his remembrance just for the sacrifices he made at the end to stand up for Aretuza. And Lydia, no, sorry.
No, not a drop.
No, she wouldn't even, what would it matter? She couldn't drink it anyway. Half her face is gone. It's over. Yes.
That's mean.
I was mean, yes. She deserves it. She was so rude and so mean. And so, I mean, like what she did, how she's going after Ciri and what she did to Yen, I'm out on her. So, all right. So we have our people. So let's pour one out for Phil Evandrel, the King of the Elves, the Skoatel, all the mages who died, and Arturus.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Blood, blood, liquor. Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Is Stregobor alive?
I think so.
I mean,
it doesn't matter. We're not pouring one out for Stregobor.
I mean, but should we even have considered it? Like, because like we're definitely not pouring anything out for him. It's terrible, but is he alive is the question. He blew up in like a crazy way. Like, I don't understand if he's alive or not.
I don't care. I mean, I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe sure. You might be right. I didn't even pay attention. Like once Stregobor, once my laughing subsided on my second watch, I moved on to the rest of the plot. I don't care what happened to Stregobor.
No, 100% not.
I was more invested. Did Francesca survive than him?
And she did. And yeah. So let's talk about the episode. Like, what do you think overall about how this all plays out?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I have no complaints about this episode. I was really worried about this part because in the book, I was thoroughly confused. I read this chapter of the book and I had no idea what happened.
Yeah.
Like, I knew Dijkstra got hurt badly, but I could not tell you where they were when that happened. Like, it wasn't super clear. I knew that Geralt got saved by Kira first and then Triss, but that was it. Like, I couldn't really tell you exactly what happened, what role. Like, I wasn't even clear how Ciri got there because I didn't understand her to be so close the night before, but she apparently was. Like, it's a really confusing sequence in the book. I feel like they complicated some things plot-wise overall, but this is a really simplistic retelling of that chapter of the book. Like, they really, for me, cleared up some of the confusion about who's on what side mm-hmm. at what point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, here's my question. I love this episode. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this a lot this season. It was one of my favorites in the whole series.
Mm-hmm. 9-2.
I thought it brought a lot of things home that we have been watching for a while, and it ended some plot points that we were ready to go, ready to see go away. Like, we were ready for Rance and Lydia to be done. We were ready for Vilgefortz to be revealed as the person. I also wondered, right? And, you know, it's going to go into when we cover the next two episodes. We decided to cover this one by itself because there's so much in it. But what I wondered was, going back to the conversation that Yen had about things, taking one action that changes things. And I thought about the rider in the night that she saw and that was supposed to deliver the message that would then have sent the fleets for Redania, that would have made this plan and this coup actually possibly work out, and some of the things that happened on their journey, and whether or not Ciri's choices with freeing that person, with other things, did any of them affect the outcome here, do you think?
Wait, repeat that again.
So, like, you know, like, we know that there was a messenger that was killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that she saw that messenger, saw him, and saw the whole vision of him getting killed. And then we also know that later on, what seems like an unconnected situation, she frees this person and then she gets the whole back and forth with her and Yen about how you can take one action.
I see.
Do you think anything that she, any things that she did, like, kind of led to the fact that maybe some of the plans that Redania had didn't work out?
That's a really good question, which is why I need to hear it again. I don't know. I would have to look back at what exactly Ciri said to Applegat.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if her putting him on alert that there was an arrow coming his way saved his life from Vizimir's arrow, mm-hmm. right? When Vizimir was messing around and almost killed him. Had he been killed at that point, then maybe a different messenger goes and the Redanians get back up.
Yeah.
I feel like we're getting into a little into the weeds here, but maybe.
I mean, it's made me think about it because I start thinking about, one of the things that is true is that Redania really did suss this out well. Like, they understood what was happening. They knew Vilgefortz was corrupting the Brotherhood. They had the Redanian coup was, they had mages internally that were helping them. They didn't have enough mages. They probably should have got more on their side, I would think. That was like one of the flaws in their plan. But I thought the Redanian coup understood at least the high level points. Yes, the Brotherhood has been invaded. They're no longer working for the good. We have to be able to like expose that so that the Brotherhood can either be broken up or come and put Vilgefortz on trial. It just didn't pan out because of all the X factors, which made me think about, well, what were the X factors and what would have thrown it off? And it put me to that speech. And, you know, there may be more for us to go back and look at later on, but it just made me think about how one thing could change the flow of everything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's something that upon my next watch of this season, I'll definitely be looking for. Yeah. Because this is the thing I think we talked about a little bit last week, is that this show is always kind of opening up more in the dialogue when you know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe upon rewatch, it will become clear that Ciri did change the course of history when she told Applegat whatever she told him, which, as I recall, wasn't that much, mm-hmm. but maybe it was just enough.
Yeah. And I mean, and so let's look at the miscalculation, right? And the moment inside that room. Why do you think they didn't go? I mean, I guess they couldn't feel comfortable going to say it directly with the fissure in the relationship. But why didn't they get more mages on their side?
I know. This part is really baffling to me. Sabrina and Kira is not enough.
Mm-mm.
Like, Marty was... So we had said that... I had said I thought Marty was on the side of Sabrina. Apparently not. But they could have had, if they had just bought Isred and Triss into the fold, then maybe they would have had a little bit more credibility. Mm-hmm. But like, Sabrina and Kira are not enough to make that. They're not even like high level in the Brotherhood. I don't even know that Taseya trust Sabrina at all.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do something like this, then an attempt to bring in Yen or bring in Triss, in my opinion, makes the most sense, because those are Taseya's daughters, basically.
My feeling, you know, is truly that Dijkstra should have deferred probably even more so to Philippa's instincts around the Brotherhood because of her understanding of who the mages are and what, mm-hmm. and what the politics are. And I think he was too involved in setting forward the strategy in a way that probably didn't serve them in the long run, because he couldn't foresee some of the things that would happen. Like, I don't know, that the person who is not got any restriction wrote the fucking spell, right?
I can't. What a flex. What a flex.
It was crazy.
Yes, the Book of the Waning Sun. I wrote that book. I love to say it.
Yeah, it's so good. It was really good.
And so that's a really good point about Dijkstra, because one thing that I think was a big miscalculation was not having Radovid with them. Mm-hmm. Because let's say that they have this idea about Vigelfort, which they're right. You know, they figured this out before Yen, Geralt, well, Triss and Isred never figured it out. Like, they figured it out before our detectives from episode 5 did. They knew at the end of episode 4. So I think that maybe had Radovid come to Taseya as an emissary from the kingdom of Redania on his brother's, you know, representing his brother, and said, listen, here's what we found. Taseya would have had to do something. She couldn't mm-hmm. ignore that, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe she doesn't believe it, because she obviously didn't believe it when Philippa was basically like, Vigelfort's been playing you. But maybe if Radovid had taken it through official channels,
yeah,
it would have at least gotten Vigelfort exiled before he could have pulled this off.
Yeah, I agree. And pulling this off was a big deal, because the Skoatel invasion, whew, wow. What? I mean, they came heavy. They came with a lot of resources, and when they're walking in, it was a pretty badass entrance, I'm not going to lie. The hoods, the whole thing, they were ready to go. And, I mean, Francesca seems to think that Ciri's there. Like, she thinks that she's coming there for Ciri. That's why she's there.
Yeah, and I don't understand how she got that information.
I don't.
Yeah, so there's a... So, the Skoatel have the element of surprise. And that's why they were able to essentially win this, even though I don't know that I think that they won, but they came pretty close to destroying Aretusa. If Ciri's not there, they lose. But like, in the chaos, that's the spell that Taseya pulled through Torlara is the reason that Torlara is so unstable, which is the reason that when Ciri engages with it, it explodes. Maybe they would have won this because they have the element of surprise, and that in itself is a big win for Nilfgaard. But they basically showed up with like a couple of guys and a few weapons, like,
yeah.
Like to take over the mages. Like, that's how weak the Brotherhood is, right? The Brotherhood is so weak that just being surprised. It takes them out, basically. Like, their numbers are so depleted. By the end of this episode, when Shregobor steps in, what, there's like maybe 8 standing mages?
Yeah, and I thought that it was pretty wise to come with the arrows, like, set up to come through like their like protection spells. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that was to me like really smart too. I guess one thing that threw me off about the invasion was Philavandrel saying, you know, the elves will take back Aretusa. Did the elves hold Aretusa? Was that one of the elves' stronghold at some point?
I mean, the elves held everything, right?
Yeah.
So I think when we... Aretusa is part of the north, and we have to go back to Vilgefortz's first landing story, right? Yeah. The humans had been on the continent for a while, but they hadn't been in the north. I mean, I think for the elves, like, it's about taking back what's theirs from these invaders. And that's why I think it's really hard for me to really pick a side in this fight. Like, I clearly wanted the side that Yen was on to win.
Yeah.
So I'm, and I think it's well noted, I'm a big Taseya fan.
Yeah.
So like, for me, it was about Taseya and Yen. But from a political standpoint, the elves have a real point here, especially because the Brotherhood does harbor people like Stregobor,
yeah,
who would prefer to wipe them out.
Yeah, he would. He's, I mean, obviously, he took joy. The joy and glee in his heart. I mean, and then there's Frangilla, who, how did she know they were going to Aretusa? Where did she pop up from? Last we saw her, she was like getting like, you know, information while drunk at a tavern. And all of a sudden now she is like clear-minded, ready to go, and murking at her uncle.
Yeah, so I think we're not supposed to overthink this, but I hate the fact that I say that like once an episode where there's some detail that I'm just like, I don't think we're supposed to care. But like, Frangilla knew that the mages were having a conclave because of what she overheard in the tavern. But did she know the elves were going to be there? I kind of want to know, did she show up like she did at the previous conclave right before Sodden, just to what? Like, what was her intention of coming there if she was just coming to crash the conclave? Maybe she was coming to be like, I have insider knowledge of Nilfgaard, and she saw that the elves were there, and so she and Francesca have a well-established relationship and decided she was going to support the elves instead.
Yeah.
But it was a weird entrance, and then her conversation with Cahir was even stranger to me. That after they have this one-sentence exchange, then Cahir suddenly has a complete 180 and decides he doesn't trust Amir anymore, and now he wants to swear himself to Cirilla?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because there's a lot of things like this in this episode that maybe are laying the groundwork for people's motivations moving forward from here, but they don't actually, like you said, they don't answer all the questions. And so, like, Cahir abandoned his post. What side will he be on in the future? We don't know. I mean, he's basically like, he told the White Flame he was back, and he was, you know, he killed one of his close friends in the Skoatel to basically go in and do what he's doing now. And then mid fight, he's like, you know what? This is craziness. I'm doing the wrong thing. Has like a change in conscience. So where is he at now? Who is he fighting for? We don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to know where he landed, because I think it's clear that Cahir survived, which is why he wasn't on the poor one out for list, because the Skoatel who went to look for Ciri, they never came back. So that tells me he won that fight. But that said, where is he?
Yeah, we don't know.
And he doesn't, like, we never see him on the, imagine now, Cahir joining Geralt in the fight against Vilgefortz.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the two of them might win that fight.
I think it's a good. I mean, it would be Cahir, Geralt, and Yen, and all the resources they have there with any mages that are left, right? So, and
I don't even think you need Yen. I think you get Cahir and Geralt. Vilgefortz is at least messed up enough that he cannot get to Ciri. Now, I still think Ciri ends up going through the portal. That portal was calling the girl's name. She could not. I think Ciri's fate is not entirely because Vilgefortz followed her there. I think I think part of it is that Geralt wasn't there to summon her back.
But see, that leads another question, right? Like, why did Ciri go to Tor Lara instead of just hiding? There's another thing that's not explained. Like,
I don't love it.
We don't know.
In the book, Ciri doesn't really have a choice. Like, there's very small, very limited options. I didn't feel like that in the show, because they show us like there's like a small cave, like there were places for her to hide. Or how about this? Ciri can just head back to Cahir.
She could have. Exactly. Or but maybe she doesn't trust what he was saying yet. So we'll give
Maybe she doesn't trust him, but I would rather take my chances with Cahir anyway. I don't know. Well, remember, seconds before this, Ciri sees Taseya pulling freaking lightning through that same portal. So why would you go there? And she was warned by Fabio, right? That's his name?
I believe so. Yeah, I think
it's in episode 3 or 4, I think it was episode 3, that tower is dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe there's something in the fates or fate that people know already, because I mean, Vilgefortz says, you know, we all know where she's going to go. We know that she's going to Tor Lara. Like, there's no way for you to stop it. Like, he's basically like calling it out as it's happening in the fight.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
I just don't.
How did he know that? How did he know that? We didn't know that.
I wish I just understood why, you know?
Me too. I mean, does Vilgi survive the explosion?
I was like, there's no way, but he has access to all that portal magic, right? So like, if it's me and I see what's happening, I portal myself out.
Yeah, that's what I would go with too. I mean, he did portal Istrid out. We don't know where did he go,
right? So that's what's funny about this. Mm-hmm. When we see Philippa rescuing Dijkstra, she can't summon a portal because of what Taseya is doing and because of the way that magic is set up at Aretuza, but he has no problem portaling Isred wherever he sent him.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is an interesting point.
So there's different magic at work here. So my guess is that Vilgi just, yes, I'm calling him Vilgi. Vilgi just portaled himself out midair before a boulder landed on him, because I don't see any other way he would have survived that. Because he was almost—he almost died when he fell off a cliff at Sodden.
Yeah, I mean, God, why did that rock miss that he?
This is all Cahir's fault. He should have finished the job.
Speaking of finishing the job, one thing that doesn't seem finished, and this is a mild spoiler for Blood Origin. So if you haven't watched, just we'll tell you something here, and maybe you want to skip ahead a couple of seconds. The Book of Monoliths, you know, how does it get to Aretuza? We don't understand that point, because we know from the prequel that Avalok had it during the fall of Syntra. So,
Paul, this is one of the most annoying things about, I was so irritated when I saw, when I finished Blood Origin. I was really big mad. You know how I get about magical objects. You know how it bothers me.
Shout out to the cat's paw dagger. Let's go. I don't have a problem with it. Listen.
I hate that stupid dagger. I hate everything.
There was a Song of Ice and Fire engraved in it, right? Like, that was it. It's right there. The whole mystery of everything was inside the dagger of what was going to happen. Come on.
I want to know how this book was. So, Isdred said it was supposed to be in the library at Aretuza. Why? How? What? Like, did Avalok just like portal into Aretuza and use the Dewey Decimal System to refile it? Like, what?
Listen.
This annoys me. I'm sure there is an in-universe explanation for it. I just need to get it like as soon as humanly possible, because it really irritates me. Like, he had it. The fall of Syntra was what, like 2 years ago? So the book was in the possession of Avalok 2 years ago, and now it's somehow it Aretuza so that first it can be hidden among Stregobor's things and then it can be taken by Vilgefortz. I don't understand this.
And obviously Blood Origin happens, the events happen way before, so this is through some sort of time travel kind of situation. So there is time travel.
Yeah, because Avalok looks exactly like he did in 1200 years before in Blood Origin. So yeah, there's some kind of time travel thing going. And maybe they will use the book to explain, maybe they'll use it to explain like the time stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But I just, this made me, when I got to that final scene of Blood Origin, it's a post-credit scene. I like lost it because, yeah, I was like, how is Avalok holding the book that has been the bane of my existence the entire season?
It's, and we should get answers. I mean, we need those kind of answers. And I mean, especially since the Book of Monoliths and Ciri's ability to open, like, you know, other worlds and everything is kind of like starting to come more to the forefront. We need to understand what's happening there. So as in most conflicts, the war has truly begun now. And being neutral in a war is going to be very difficult. It's a very difficult thing to be like totally neutral. In almost all the conflicts presented in this episode, the people on each side think they're doing what's right, as you stated. So, I mean, what are we going to, where do you think this all shakes out as far as like Geralt's neutrality, anybody else, like the perspectives of each side? Because right now the sides that we think we have is we have the Redanians, we have Nilfgaard, and we have the elves and the Skoatel. Skoatel is a little bit aligned with Nilfgaard. And obviously Vilgefortz is aligned with Nilfgaard at this point. And obviously Aretuza as well. We have Aretuza, the mages.
So one of the things I love about this story is that you do have those moments with the conflict between the elves and the Northern Kingdoms where you're not sure which side you're on. We have seen enough in this show of the cruelty of the Northern Kingdoms. And it's not just Syntra. I think all of the Northern Kingdoms are guilty of cruelty towards the elves. And it's been escalating, right? So in season one, Philivandriel is on the run in part because of Calanthe, but we see other elves who are living in villages, who are living semi-normal lives. Now that's impossible. We've seen the purge of elves and other magical people from the Northern Kingdoms. That's how Yaskier got his Sandpiper title, by helping them get to Syntra. So it's hard to be really angry at the elves, even when they're against our main players. Like, I get Francesca's point of view.
Yeah, agreed.
What else is Francesca is from a culture where they're trying to hold on to their heritage, and their heritage is deeply seeped in prophecies and fate. Francesca's culture is telling her that Ciri is going to save her people. Of course she wants to get hold of Ciri. It makes sense. I think she could have just sent, you know, a letter.
Yeah.
Outlining.
I agree.
Like I said before, like, this goes down differently if Francesca says, hey, Dara, like, you know this girl. Could you go and talk to her? Because maybe there's an alliance to be formed here. The fact that she's trying to kidnap Ciri is part of the issue. But like, it's hard to be angry at Francesca for what her drive is. I can be mad at her for how she goes about it. The tactics and strategy she uses are cruel. And she's clearly anti-human. But that, I think, in itself is also understandable. I think Philivandriel led the elves and tried to carve out a place for his people to live amongst the humans, and that didn't work. So now what Francesca is saying is basically like, the humans are cruel. They're not going, there's no place for us amongst them. We have to have our own stuff. We have to have our own kingdom. that's extremely understandable. And I actually hope that she gets it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I want the elves to have a place to call home. They were not the first people on the continent, but like they were on the continent before the humans got there. However, I also understand very deeply the point of like the feelings of Geralt, Yen. I don't know how Ciri falls on this, to be honest. And those who are trying, and Yaskier, those who are trying to protect Cirilla. And then I also get to Seiya's point, which is like, there's some things we just don't do. Like the Brotherhood is important and she's trying to save it. So this conflict is really tough. The fight itself, yeah, I wanted Yen to win.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but there's also, I mean, me too, because she's fighting for Ciri, she's fighting for her family, she's fighting for Aretuza, where we've seen her, you know, have a love-hate relationship with. But I also think, like, one of the things that really stands out to me with Francesca is that, you know, she's been lied to. She's been lied to about... And she's motivated and fueled by this upset about Redania killing her child. And there's Redania on the other side of this conflict.
Yeah.
And they're in there saying they're trying to purge the mages. Well, she may not believe that they have pure intentions. Maybe that she has to, like, you know, crack a few eggs to make an omelet, even if that means taking out some mages to get rid of Redania, because she doesn't believe maybe that they are the ones who are going to be, you know, fair and honest, but she's going off of false information because all of this was done by Nilfgaard. So that is something that is really wild to me that that's why I don't fault her and Phil Evandrel on some levels, because yes, while there's like a prophecy and all these other things, some of her anger and some of what's fueling her is based on being deceived as well. What I can't quite wrap my mind around when we're talking about motivations is why Cahir would galvanize this group of people, partner with, you know, Vilgefortz, walk into this place, and then all of a sudden decide that fighting Redania and these other people is not really worth it. So I'm still kind of unclear as to what really, why he did everything leading up to this moment to then exit stage right. You know what I mean? So I'm still working on that.
Yeah, I think that Amir and Vilgefort played this really well, in that they knew that the animosities between these two groups were such that they could exploit them. Mm-hmm. Because like the Elven conflict goes back to Syntra, right? Like it's at least been going on for at least the reign of Calanthe. Like, we don't know how much longer it's been going, but like, there's always been this conflict between, first of all, the various the various northern kingdoms have their own beefs with each other. Then on top of that, you have them not trusting the Brotherhood anymore, the Brotherhood's diminished powers. Then on top of that, you have the elves and other magical people who are being treated like second-class citizens, which actually would be an upgrade for some of them, because mm-hmm. it's like actual genocide mm-hmm. For some. So you have all of these forces together, all of the wrongs of the past are kind of coming to this moment, and Amir is going to exploit them. And he's very good. Like, we've seen that on an individual level, he's good at exploiting people's weaknesses. Look mm-hmm. what he's done with Fringilla and Cahir. Mm-hmm. He's managed to get both of them kind of programmed so that they see him as the only path forward, so that they can have any freedom at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And so this is a really smart strategy. I have questions about why Vilgefort had to do this part, the Brotherhood part. Whose idea was this? Was this Amir's idea to come for the Brotherhood, or did Vilgefort kind of offer them up because he sees them as potentially the only path forward the Northern Kingdoms have to protect themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think like they're going to lose credibility, right? The Brotherhood is going to lose credibility after this. And there may not be a way for them in reputation and or in numbers to be able to totally come back from where they are right now.
And well, I think the Brotherhood itself is done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Arturus is gone. I don't know what Shregobor is doing. I don't know. Sabrina took up arms against the Brotherhood, right? So my guess is she's out. Who knows? Like, Yen was never really in. Who knows where Triss and Isdred fall? Like, yeah. I just think the Brotherhood is fractured no matter what. And that's not a great position for anybody, even though I think the Brotherhood was deeply flawed, obviously harbored bigots like Shregobor. But it at least was a place where diplomacy happened sometimes.
Yeah.
It hasn't been working very well these last few years, but I think the reason that the Brotherhood doesn't work super well is actually because there were multiple kingdoms that opted out of it. So I think if Syntra had a mage that was part of the Brotherhood that reported to them, then things may have gone differently. Maybe someone would have come to Syntra's aid, or maybe several mages would have come to Syntra's aid, because Malsak tried to save Syntra all by himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think maybe, I don't know. I think that there was definitely a role for the Brotherhood, but I agree with Yen's season one analysis of the Brotherhood, which is that it's all bullshit.
Yeah, no, 100%. And even in her growth, she understands where I think there's going to have to be a lot of shaking up. You know, I want to talk before, you know, because I know we're getting close here to wrapping. I definitely want to talk about one of the things that I think that they all throughout the season have done well and did this very well in this episode, keeping this as a core element, is Geralt, Yen, and Ciri as the family. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about it earlier, you know, the conversation, and you know, we didn't come this far to abandon each other, Geralt says. And then Yen says, then don't abandon me. I have to do this. And she's crying, you know, in tears. And she tells Ciri, I've searched so long, fought so long, hurt so many, and it was all worth it. No matter where you go or where you hide, we will never be apart. And she's still crying. And destiny brought us together, never lost, always found. I love you, my daughter. And then Ciri says, come back. No, Geralt says, come back to us. And it was one of those moments. I mean, you couldn't help but get emotional.
I was a wreck. I was, at this point, I was bawling.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And I have to say, Anya and Freya killed this episode. Like, yeah, they were both so good.
Yeah.
That I could actually see a path forward for this show without Henry. Like, that was the first glimpse of like, oh, maybe they can carry it on their own. And not to say that, like, as actresses, they couldn't carry something on their own before, but the writing hasn't been there. This bond, this mother-daughter bond that they have, it was when Taseya called Yen a mother for the first time, I had trouble with that. I even think I said to you, this feels like big sister.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't feel like mother. This moment, I was like, this is a family breaking up and mm-hmm. not knowing if they're ever going to see each other again. And I had a really hard time putting myself in Yen's place. And I think I'm meant to, of this moment of like, I'm choosing between my mother, the only mother I've ever known, the one person who's never given up on me, and the one person I'll never give up on.
Yeah.
And that had to have been the most difficult thing in the world for Yen, because her and Geralt have been on the same page without even talking about it. When Geralt doesn't come back to the bedroom that morning, Yen doesn't go looking for him. She ain't worried about him. She was looking for Taseya, couldn't find Taseya. Sun comes up, Ciri, got to get to Ciri. Mm-hmm. Not even thinking about Geralt, because she knows that that's what he would want. As parents, they protecting their child is before they protect each other. So this moment was absolutely heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think
I wasn't sure if they would, if they actually will ever see each other again.
No.
Right? Like,
agreed.
Like, in the book, we don't see Yen again for a while. And so there's this real feeling of, like, this actually may be the last time this family is together, both in universe, but also meta. Like,
yeah.
Like, this actually, this scene might be the last scene of all three of them together. I was beside myself. Like, this was absolutely beautiful. And the notion that Yen heard to say his call before anything was really apparent was also, I was like, wow. Like, she felt to say is summoning all that power, and she knew she had to go to her.
Yeah, it was, and really strong.
I was a wreck. I was bawling through this whole episode. I also thought a couple of other things were going to happen that didn't end up happening, but, like, this was really the most like, emotionally impactful moment of the whole episode, in an episode where we literally see Philandriel explode.
Yeah, I agree.
And we see his wife see that and go through another loss. Like, we've seen Francesca lose her child, her brother, many, 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 many of her subjects, the other elves, mm-hmm. and now her husband, which is all she had. Like, I actually do think if Frangilla, who has been, like, a person that she at least feels seen by and can relate to, had not shown up, I think Francesca summons all kinds of crazy magic. Like, pulling that little ring of fire down would have been nothing.
Yeah, agreed. No, 100%. 100%. That ring of fire, that was a nice little touch. It was a nice little accent.
It was dope. Like, can we just take a minute and say that, like, everything in this episode looked great?
No, it was amazing. Are you kidding me? Yeah. It's one of the best. 100%.
This show has not always had the best effects, and they nailed it. It just looked great.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think about the book the differences between what happened in the book and what the show shows us here? Like, how much of a difference is there?
I'm going to keep it kind of light because there's some things I want to hold for the wrap up.
Okay.
As I said earlier, like, they do a really good job, in my opinion, of simplifying this conflict. Francesca has a turn moment in this battle in the book, or at least it appears that way. We don't get to see that because she hasn't been in the fold with the Brotherhood this whole time. Whereas in the book, she's a member of the council. So, it's a little bit, that part is definitely different. The stuff with Vilgefort and Taseya, obviously we've been saying this all along, that relationship is not a thing in the books. However, Taseya does have this moment in the battle where it appears that she's kind of giving up, like she's not sure what to do and how to move forward. And I never understood that in the book. And again, I do think I need a second closer reading of the book, because I think there are things I didn't quite seep in that I'm wondering now, did I just, like, not read it close enough? Did I not get the context? But I never really understood Taseya's headspace in this battle. I was really confused. I think I even, like, messaged one of our friends who has read the books multiple times and said, like, what side is Taseya on? I'm confused. Mm-hmm. However, the stuff with Vilgefort does help make sense of Taseya's mindset and her just being stunned, not knowing what to do, having that moment where she's just like, it is when she says to Isdred and Triss, it's too late. That helped me. I don't love the relationship. I don't love this part where Taseya got fooled by Vilgefort when apparently Philippa, who hasn't seen him in ages, figured it out. Like, I don't love it.
Yeah, I have a lot.
But I do think it helps. There's just this moment that Taseya has we go on like a whole evolution with her. So taking a step back, I'm a little off track because this is not comparing to the book directly, but I just want to make some sense of Tisaya's mindset, because I think we're supposed to embody her point of view and Francesca's point of view for all the stuff that's happening in Aretusa. Mm. And I think for all the stuff that's happening outside of Aretusa, we're supposed to embody Yen and Siri. Tisaya goes from being absolutely stunned and devastated by the person who she's essentially said is the love of her life. Mm-hmm. Betraying not just her, but everything she believes in, to immediately going to, this is my castle. You ain't taking it. We're going to fight together. To being completely devastated by Art Taurus's death, to seeing Triss being wounded and just completely being like, all is lost. The only thing I can do is summon the spell of last resort. It's a wild ride, right? And I think Francesca also has this moment of we're closing in on this thing that we've been trying to do for over a year, which is find Cirilla of Syntra. Mm-hmm. We're gonna fight to the best of our ability because we're in the right here and we believe. To losing, seeing the last person she has in this world who is her person, who loves her, who is her family, destroyed in front of her, to being like, everybody can die, I'll kill everybody, like literally I don't care, everyone can die, to Fringilla saying to her, these people are depending on you, you cannot fall apart right now. And it's a really interesting both of those stories, that those stories of Tisaya versus Francesca are really interesting to me. And what I love about that scene right before Stregobor comes in is we're about to watch a battle where it's just women.
Yeah.
Like right when Yen shows up, it's like Margarita, Sabrina, Marty, Yen. I think Triss is still there, against Francesca, Fringilla. Like it's like this moment where I was like, oh, we're about to watch like a badass magical fight between a bunch of women. I'm for it. And then Stregobor, of course, had to come and ruin it with his foolishness.
You mongrels.
I can't stand that guy. Anyway, back to the book. There's Yaskier's story in the book is totally different. This thing with Radovid in him is Radovid is a child at this point in the story. Like he's a kid. So that's definitely not a thing. But I like this emotional journey we've been on with Yaskier.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm fine with that change. And the stuff between Vilgefort and Geralt is different. There's just like, there's a lot less, I can't believe I'm saying this, but there's a lot less chaos in the book. Like the book is really chaotic. There's a lot of named characters who are fighting with Geralt, against Geralt, with Vilgefort, against it. Like, it's really confusing. And then this thing happens with the portal and Ciri, and that's almost the end of it, but not fully. And so there's some changes, but this is still more faithful, I think, to the book than season two was at all.
Yeah. No, that's that. I appreciate hearing that because I was wondering. And I'm glad that you have a showrunner that can simplify those details into and aging people up. You know, we've seen it happen on multiple different other shows. Sometimes because I can help with that, because I do love the work that they're doing here with Yaskier, and even with the complexities of the relationship between Radovid and him. So it's really, really cool. Well, that is going to do it for episode 6. We left a little meat on the bone, but we will be back next week covering episodes 7 and 8 to close out our regular season coverage of The Witcher. And then there'll be some bonus episodes, Blood Origin, and a wrap-up episode on the way as well. So until next week, see you next time.
Bye, everyone.